Today's interview is brought to you by healthrangerstore.com and our wide variety of storable food and really high nutrition products. I've got some on my desk, some of my favorites. The one in the center there is coconut milk powder, which is really super delicious. It's mineral rich and it adds a fatty, creamy, luscious, delicious taste to lots of recipes, including smoothies. We've got quinoa there on the right, which of course is a gluten-free. It's kind of a grain. It's not technically a grain, but people use it like a grain. It's really delicious in a lot of recipes. Very high in protein. And I remember eating this when I was hiking in the Andes Mountains. And the local people who helped us, they would bring quinoa and eggs. And they would just get water from the mountain streams, and they would boil the quinoa and eggs, and we would have quinoa egg soup right there on the trail outside of our camping tents. That's on the way. I was hiking to Machu Picchu at that time, and we did the long hike, not the bus ride. It was hiking over the Andes Mountains up to 14,000 feet and back down, and we were powered by quinoa. Okay, then we've also got goji berries on the left there, which are, of course, from the Tibetan regions of modern-day China, but we do all the testing for heavy metals and glyphosate, as well as them being certified organic. So ultra clean goji berries, world-class quality, available now at healthrangerstore.com, along with many other products such as nascent iodine and also Iosat potassium iodide tablets. You know, good to get that as an emergency measure. We've got pea protein. We've got organic superfruit sea powder, which is really delicious. I use this with blended frozen bananas and frozen blueberries. You can also use freeze-dried blueberries with this, and it makes a super delicious fruit smoothie. Throw in a couple of goji berries in there, or like a small handful, and you've really boosted the nutrition. Organic cacao nibs, and so much more. Check it all out at healthrangerstore.com, and we appreciate your support. Thanks for watching. Welcome to today's interview on Brighteon.com. I'm Mike Adams, the founder of Brighteon. And as you know, Robert F. Kennedy Jr., he is of a family that has suffered a lot of tragedy over many generations of assassinations and deaths. And there are death threats against Robert F. Kennedy Jr. himself right now as well. Now, an extraordinary author who we interviewed once before, named Dick Russell, who has authored a book called The Real RFK Jr., he has also previously covered the JFK assassination in a series of three books, one of which is called On the Trail of the JFK Assassins, a groundbreaking look at America's most infamous conspiracy. And so Dick Russell joins us now to talk about that assassination of JFK and so much more. Welcome to the show, Mr. Russell. It's an honor to have you back on. I really appreciated talking with you before, and I look forward to today.
So do I, Mike. Thanks for having me back again.
It's great to have you back on. So first, I just want your reaction over the fact that there was an assassination that just happened in Ecuador of a presidential candidate there. I don't recall his name, but he was more on the right of the political spectrum. Were you aware of that happening?
I just read about it, that it had happened. And of course, you know, I'm not surprised that these kinds of things are still going on. And I'm not surprised that it happened. And, you know, Ecuador is having a lot of turmoil right now. So I don't know too much about it, but I know that there's an election about to happen. And a lot of these countries, people get bumped off, sadly.
Well, yeah, I used to live in Ecuador. I've seen a little bit firsthand of some of the shenanigans that can go on around elections. But this candidate was apparently outspoken against communist China. And that's, I don't know, it's supposed that that might be one of the reasons that he was taken out. But let's get to your book and JFK, the assassination of JFK, which altered the course of American history, I think, for the worse. And when we had you on last time, I believe you said that you thought that was a CIA operation, a deep state operation to carry out a political coup against the United States of America, and we've been under that coup since then. Is that sort of an accurate summary of how you think this went down?
Yeah, in a sense. I mean, I'm not saying that the CIA per se as an organization from the top did it, but I think definitely rogue CIA agents and officers working closely with the mafia and with Cuban exiles and with right-wing elements, probably international fascist elements, conspired together to assassinate President Kennedy.
And so in your books, you dismantle the official narrative, which has always been kind of a fantasy, right?
Yeah, it's absolutely a fantasy. I mean, there was a cover-up from the get-go. We had a coup d'etat in America that day. I don't think the country's ever really recovered from it. And the truth has certainly never been told. Now, I think the Warren Commission, which was the initial body that looked into this and concluded that Lee Harvey Oswald acted alone, I think they covered up probably for reasons different than the CIA would have. In other words, well, Alan Dulles, of course, he was the former director of the CIA, and he was on the Warren Commission. He was basically kind of the lead guy, except Earl Warren was the Chief Justice of the Supreme Court, who Lyndon Johnson appointed to run it. But I think probably Earl Warren was told that, this guy Oswald, if we really look into him, he's an agent of the Cubans and the Russians, which was not true, but we're going to have World War III. And therefore, that Warren agreed to, okay, we'll just put a lid on this and go along with the fact that, yeah, this one guy got arrested and somehow managed to fire off three shots within 6.2 seconds from the sixth floor window of the Texas School Book Depository.
And now the fact that Oswald was put in play clearly indicates the premeditation of this entire thing. So not only was JFK, taken out, but then they had this patsy ready to take the blame. So that really indicates a depth of the engineering of the events. And that sort of speaks to high-level intelligence involvement of some kind, wouldn't you say?
Oh, yeah, I would. I mean, I'm sure, and more is coming out now about this, actually, through Jefferson Morley, a very fine researcher, and others, that the CIA was working an operation around the Fair Play for Cuba Committee, so-called, that Oswald had set up in New Orleans and had been using Oswald in that capacity. And there's a lot of, the whole Oswald's history is so bizarre. I mean,
yeah,
he's a Marine in Japan. He supposedly defects to the Soviet Union as a disgruntled ex-Marine. Was he sent over there on a mission? Most likely. Comes back 2.5 years later with a Russian wife, and then immediately gets a job after being a defector in Russia, right? He gets a job with a map company, Jaggers Charles Stovall, that is actually mapping missile, sites in Cuba right before the missile crisis. I mean, how does that happen?
Right.
There's just so many weird things about Oswald, and he said when he was arrested that day, as people probably are my age and yours perhaps would remember, he said, "I'm a patsy, and I've been set up in this deal," which is indicating that he was not some innocent bystander, that he had intelligence connections. He was somehow there in the Texas School Book Depository that day under some kind of assignment. But there's no way that he fired the shots that killed President Kennedy.
Well, I think also to understand this history, we have to look at the context of what we now know today about how the deep state is waging war against, in particular, Donald J. Trump. Now, regardless of what you or our viewers believe about Trump's policies or decisions or politics or what have you, it's clear that he is being heavily, aggressively targeted by elements of the deep state with these ongoing criminal indictments of a ridiculous nature. Oh, like you disagreed with the outcome of the election. You said the election was rigged. Well, meanwhile, there's cocaine in the Oval Office. There's a laptop of evidence on Hunter Biden and so on. There's $20 million in funding, wire transfers and so on, received by a Hunter Biden-linked shell company. And congressional committee has just released that. There's no prosecutions of Democrats. There's aggressive prosecutions of Trump. Doesn't that speak to the capability of deception and the weaponization of the government against the enemies of the status quo?
Yeah, I think it does. And of course, you're seeing the same targeting right now, ironically or not, of Robert Kennedy Jr.
That's right.
Because he's a candidate for president, and they're doing everything they can to basically tar and feather him. Accuse him of everything from crazy to conspiracy theorist, anti-vaxxer, dangerous to the Democratic Party because he'll help get Trump elected. He's really a right-winger in disguise. I mean, all this crap.
Right.
Around about him. And, you know, it's so blown out of proportion, it's ridiculous. And I, you know, I hope people will also pick up my book, The Real RFK Jr., to find out who the guy really is. But, you know, yeah, I mean, this deep state has been around for a while. And I think it goes back. This is the 60th anniversary of the Kennedy assassination this year. There's a podcast that I'm involved in with Rob Reiner and Soledad O'Brien. It's going to be a 10-part podcast series that starts in November, looking at what really went on with the assassination of the president. I think a lot of people will find that of interest, too.
Oh, wow. Okay. Let me give out your website, dickrussell.org. And that's Russell is spelled with two S's and two L's, dickrussell.org. And I assume you'll have a link on your website to that podcast series when it's available?
I will eventually, yes.
Okay, great. I want to hear that. That's for sure. I hope you'll keep me posted. And then also, I understand you have a 60th anniversary of your book coming out here, this one, On the Trail of the JFK Assassinations, or Assassins, excuse me. Is that, is it a audio coming out, or is it a printed book, or both? What is that?
I think it's going to be both. I mean, it's currently available in hardcover and paperback. It came out in 2005, I believe. And I'm going to update it a bit and add some new information. That book, unlike my first one, is a much shorter, it sort of describes my own history of investigating. I was really the first journalist on the trail, the independent journalist, looking into the reality, the truth behind who killed JFK back in the 1970s. So it's kind of my personal story. It's reprints of articles I did at that time, and then it's new information that I uncovered that wasn't in my first book, which was called The Man Who Knew Too Much.
Can you give us an example of some of the new information that has come to light, let's say in the last decade or so, that you didn't have access to when you were originally investigating this? What do we know now?
I think we know more about the fact, well, first of all, the government is still withholding a remarkable number of files that the Biden administration has decided not to release under still grounds of national security 60 years later, which is pretty absurd on the face of it.
Yes.
And you know, I think in those documents, there's going to be information about a guy named George Ioannidis, who was a CIA officer in Miami that worked with the Cuban exiles, who are definitely involved in the assassination of the president. All the files on Ioannidis are still being withheld. And then they're trying to withhold more about the Oswald's operations in New Orleans with the Fair Play for Cuba Committee, because what we know now have come to realize is that the CIA was definitely targeting that group and probably using Oswald as a provocateur in order to do it. So those are some new things that have come out. We've also, there's another book that came out not too long ago, and it's about a guy, it's the diaries of Jean-Pierre Lafitte, who was a real guy and kept a date book where he had some very cryptic but fascinating information on the people that were behind the assassination along with himself, like General Charles Willoughby, who worked closely with the H.L. Hunt Oil family, was a fervent right-winger in Texas that I first wrote about in my book, The Man Who Knew Too Much, and right-wing elements all the way, you know, to ex-Nazi Hitler people, Otto Skorzeny, over in Europe. So there's that element that ties into a conspiracy that had to be pretty vast. I don't think it involved tons and tons of people, because somebody would have probably talked, but a lot of people were killed who knew, who had inside information. And the autopsy, which we're going to look at very carefully in the Rob Reiner podcast series. I mean, all the doctors at Parkland Hospital after JFK was shot saw wounds that clearly came from the front,
yeah,
not behind where Oswald was. And then they fudged the autopsy completely. It was a military autopsy in Bethesda, Maryland. And it was completely, it was done by Navy guys who really weren't that experienced and would easily take orders from somebody to say, hey, you know, there's certain things we can't show in order to prove that we've got to have this guy killed from Oswald in the Texas School Book Depository. And that's the story that we're going to go with. Nobody fired from the front. And in fact, there had to be at least two more shooters from the front, from the Grassy Knoll and the South Knoll areas.
Yeah, they were going to make sure that they got their job done no matter what. You know, redundant systems, in other words, multiple shooters. You've used the term right-winger several times in describing some of the assassination elements behind JFK's assassination. And I'm wondering if that's some oil people, you know, big money oil people, or
yeah,
military people, or what But I also want to point out that it's very interesting. I find that today, so-called right-wing people would love JFK because JFK was pro-America. He was, you know, he was patriotic. He was in favor of free markets and things like that. And by the way, this is why a lot of conservatives really love RFK Jr. also right now. So isn't it interesting how the dynamics have shifted in 60 years so dramatically?
Yeah, it really is. And when I say right wing, I'm talking about extremists and, you know, in the so-called right wing. I'm not talking about regular folks who may consider themselves conservative or on the right of what's going on today in the country. So I want to make that clear. But there were extremist elements in the military who hated JFK. They felt he was betraying the country because he'd made a deal with the Russians and the Cubans after the missile crisis, where we were almost all, you know, cast into oblivion. We wouldn't be sitting here talking had Kennedy not overruled the Joint Chiefs of Staff that he was assembled there and trying to get nuclear weapons to bomb Cuba.
Well, right. But doesn't, I mean, Kennedy, I'm sorry to interrupt, but I think JFK saved all of us.
Oh, he did. That's what I'm saying.
Yeah.
He saved us from those people.
I mean, he saved the world from nuclear annihilation.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
No, if I didn't make that clear, it's certainly
okay.
True.
Yeah. Well, I just wanted to clarify that because it sounds like you're saying that there were people in the military who were angry that we weren't in a nuclear war.
Well, there were. There were right.
That's wild.
Right. Yeah. That's what they wanted.
Jeez.
People like, you know, remember the movie Dr. Strangelove? Well, we had those kind of people, you know, and Curtis LeMay was one of them. There were some generals that were convinced that we had to bomb Cuba back to the Stone Age, or at least, you know, get those missiles out of there. And JFK and his brother, Robert Kennedy, knew that if we did that, we were going to have World War III.
Yes.
And so he had a whole back channel secret correspondence going with Nikita Khrushchev, the premier of Russia at that, the Soviet Union at that time, to make sure that we came to some kind of, you know, agreement that would prevent that from happening. And then, you know, in June of 63, about, I don't know, 4 months before he was killed, JFK gave this incredible speech at American University where he talked about how we had to have peace in the world.
Oh, I know the speech you're talking about. Well, probably one of the greatest speeches ever delivered.
Yeah, and it stopped nuclear testing in the atmosphere, which was going on. And also, if it had been allowed to continue, you know, we'd have been poisoned by it by now.
Yeah.
So he did that, and then they killed him. And I say they, and it was, you know, elements, I think, that are very dark elements in this country that for various reasons hated him. The mafia didn't like him because they wanted their casinos back in Cuba, and Robert Kennedy was putting a lot of those guys behind bars. The Cuban exiles on the right side were embittered because, you know, they wanted to get back into their country and wanted to get rid of Castro. And then there was the elements of the CIA and the military and the big oil companies that were threatened by Kennedy's policies.
Well, that's an interesting mix. What do you believe is the overarching, the primary culprit behind this? I mean, who were the real movers, at least as best as you can tell from your research, that pushed this through?
You know, it had all the earmarks of an intelligence operation. So I would say, based on my research, that General Charles Willoughby, who had been Douglas MacArthur's chief of his spy master back during the Korean War and earlier, I think, in World War II, who was a MacArthur called him my little fascist. I mean, he was a
really?
Real, yeah, he was quite a, yeah, and he had connections to a lot of the ex-Nazis, many of whom, of course, had gone to work for the CIA after the war. Under Operation Paperclip.
That's true.
Enlisted their services, right? So I think it was a mastermind like Willoughby, a brilliant, you know, horrible strategist, and I guess you'd say, and of the CIA, people, Alan Dulles had been fired by Kennedy. How involved was he? We don't really know, but probably will never know. James Angleton, the chief of counterintelligence for the CIA, also couldn't stand Kennedy. I interviewed Angleton several times, and of course he tried to make it look like the Cubans and the Russians were behind it, and that was the intent by the plotters to kind of take out, you know, kill two birds with one stone, take out Kennedy and make it look like Castro did it, and we'd invade Cuba.
Wow. Well, I guess it's still convenient to blame the Russians for everything because we're still seeing that in 2023 here. But it also seems like the Kennedy family has often been targeted by the establishment, even in the 1960s as well as today, because for whatever reason, the Kennedy family, they combine this charisma and leadership with also a real American patriotism. You know, I mean, you could argue this about RFK Jr.'s father, as well as JFK himself and RFK Jr. himself today. I mean, they love America. They're humanitarian people. They're not arrogant. You know, I mean, you watch RFK Jr. speak today. He's not arrogant. He's essentially pleading with people to come to your damn senses. Right?
I totally agree. And his, you know, in that sense, his father was, of course, a model for him, you know, and his father, similarly to what Bobby Jr. has done, you know, when he came into the race in 1968, he was challenging at the time. Lyndon Johnson was president and had not resigned. Eugene McCarthy was already challenging Johnson on the Vietnam War. And when Bobby Kennedy came into the race, nobody gave him a chance. The big media vilified him as, why is he doing this? By the summer in the California primary where he was killed, right after his victory there, he was going to go on to the nomination and likely the presidency.
Yes.
And he would have reopened the investigation into his brother's death. I mean, there's
absolutely
no doubt. So, you know, he was also taken out by a conspiracy. And I write about it in Real RFK Jr., how Bobby Kennedy Jr. went to visit Sirhan in prison not too long ago, the accused assassin, the convicted assassin. And also has come to the conclusion, as I have too, that Sirhan did not fire the shots that killed his father.
Wow.
That he was firing, he did hit people. He walked into that pantry, doesn't remember even walking into the pantry, fired and hit a couple of people with bullets. But Robert Kennedy was killed from behind. He was shot in the back of the neck. And that was not Sirhan's bullet.
Yeah, it sounds like an MK Ultra operation on Sirhan there.
It was. I'm sure that it was. If people know that, if people recall what that was. It was an effort by the CIA, primarily. Most of those files were destroyed in 1973, but they'd been trying to develop ways to control human behavior through hypnosis and drugs for a long time.
Yes.
And you know that was that's a reality that existed and could well have been used on people like Sirhan, who was very hypnotizing.
So I'm hoping our audience fully grasps what we're talking about here, that the America we're living in today is not the America that we were supposed to inherit. Yeah. Our nation has been stolen from us. Our future has been stolen. I mean, from the 1960s to today, all of that future, I mean, that was like a fork in the road of assassinating JFK. We should have been a much more just, more abundant, more free country today in 2023, if not for that deep state, whatever, assassination of JFK. I mean, they stole our future. They stole our country. And that persists to this day to where, again, another, you know, Bobby Kennedy, RFK Jr., is also maligned dishonestly by a media, the same media that covered up for the assassination of JFK. It's still happening.
It's still happening. And they're still covering that up, too. I mean, there's been a huge reluctance on the part of the big media to look into this, what really happened back then. Maybe they got egg on their face because they never did. But, yeah, it's been a downhill slide. I totally agree with you ever since. And you know, it resulted, you know, then we had Watergate with President Nixon, and some of the people involved in the Watergate burglary had been involved back with the Cuban exiles and with the assassination. And then we had later the Iran-Contra scandal and the invasion, the false invasion of Iraq based on weapons of mass destruction that were not there. I mean,
that's right.
You know, we got into the Vietnam War on a lie because the Gulf of Tonkin, JFK was pulling out of Vietnam. And suddenly we had this Gulf of Tonkin incident where basically we faked the sinking of ships by the North Vietnamese. And then we escalated that war. So it's been a series of duplicitous acts by the government that have gone on to this day. And we need a huge change in this country. We need a peaceful revolution that Robert Kennedy Jr. is calling for.
Completely agree with you. And it seems like, in fact, I want to ask you, to what extent was JFK's anti-war stance? And it's not really that he wasn't philosophically just anti-war. He simply preferred practical peace, you know, peace for the right reasons. He wasn't opposed to national defense, for example, but he wanted peace and didn't want to just drag us into endless wars. And yet today you look at the candidates that are being attacked by the media, they tend to be those who are calling for peace, including, again, RFK Jr. saying, why are we at war with Russia? Why can't we negotiate with Russia? You know, JFK had a back channel to Khrushchev. But today there is no back channel to Putin, because our State Department today, which in my opinion consists of a bunch of historically inept international bullies and fascists, they refuse to speak to anyone, including other, well, especially in Russia. And if you can't communicate, how are you ever supposed to find peace and return to trade rather than just bombing each other to death? I mean, war seems to be the big push all these generations.
It does. And you're exactly right. And yeah, that's the thing about that I always admired so much about the Kennedys was that they were willing to grow in office. You know, that JFK came in, he was a pretty strong cold warrior, you know, and only when we faced annihilation and our future generations too through the missile crisis did he realize that, wow, we better wake up and change this world and come to some kind of accommodation, or what's it all for, you know? And so he did. And then Robert Kennedy became a very compassionate human being after his brother's death. I mean, went through agony, you can imagine, for many months. Read the Greeks, read the existentialists, and then came out of it somebody who could, when Martin Luther King was killed shortly before he could stand in front of a crowd of African-Americans who people were about to riot and did all over the country, and address them in Indianapolis in a way that, you know, he could calm that group and call for peace, basically. So, you know, now Robert Kennedy Jr., I mean, he went through agony after his father's death. He became, you know, sort of a young hippie and rode freight trains with hobos and became a drug addict for a long time. Came out the other side of that in 1983. He's been sober ever since and going to AA meetings. So, I mean, he's been there too, you know, and these are people who have struggled in life. They didn't just live in a world of privilege that they were born into, and came to have very powerful feelings for people who didn't have what they'd had growing up. And that's why I think the Kennedy family in many ways exemplifies, for all the tragedies and all the problems that they've had, they still exemplify that, in my view.
Yeah, and I think electing Robert F. Kennedy Jr. to the White House would be the ultimate act of rebellion against the deep state and the war machine.
I think so.
It would be the way for the American people basically to give the finger to the deep state and say, no, we're going to take our country back.
Yeah.
But I would say that war and money printing are the two things that you know, they go hand in hand. They have to print money to build the machines for war. But also then war creates all these opportunities for laundering and bribery and kickbacks to those in power. Yeah. And every day it seems like Joe Biden is standing up there and saying, we need another $10 billion for Ukraine. Or I think recently, today, $25 billion more for Ukraine. And when they say for Ukraine, of course, they don't mean that at all. They mean for the military-industrial complex with kickbacks to their, you know, family members of senators and State Department people and you know, regime officials and so on. So it's war and money printing. And I think wasn't the central bank fiat currency situation on the radar of JFK too before he was assassinated?
Yeah, it was. And I don't honestly recall the exact details of it, but there are some who believe that because of what he was trying to do in terms of stopping some of the Federal Reserve's policies, that's another reason he was assassinated. I honestly never looked into it that much, but I think that that definitely was a factor. And certainly what he did, he was going to cut the oil depletion allowance for companies like H.L. Hunt's oil company in Texas. That made him anathema to those folks. So he was fighting the status quo, and he was fighting, you know, for the people and for a better world. So I think his brother would have done even more, and we'd have a different country had those guys lived.
Yeah.
But they didn't, and maybe we got another shot now. I don't know.
Well, again, only if we learn the lessons of history can we avoid repeating them. And that's why your books are so important. I want to thank you for all the years of effort you've put into your books. And also, you have the 60th anniversary edition coming out. Let me plug your book one more time. It's called On the Trail of the JFK Assassins, a groundbreaking look at America's most infamous conspiracy. And you are the author, and Sean Runette is the narrator. Okay. So, folks, Dick Russell's website is dickrussell.org. And any final thoughts, Dick, before we let you go today?
No, it's been great talking to you again, Mike, you know, because I think we're on the same page about this. And interestingly, now, you know, he's being accused of being a conspiracy theorist, of course, but Robert Kennedy Jr. is out there talking about exactly what we've been talking about, and has come to the painful realization that both his father and his uncle were killed by these forces.
Yeah.
And he's not afraid to talk about it. And of course, the Biden administration has denied him Secret Service protection, which is makes right. you wonder too.
Well, anytime the establishment uses the term conspiracy theory, that means you're not supposed to look at this. Or when they use the label disinformation, that means you're probably speaking the truth.
Yeah. So, back to the CIA, you know, the CIA coined the term conspiracy theory in 1967, by the way.
That's right.
So, you know, there we are.
That's right. Right. Okay. Well, Mr. Russell, it's always a pleasure speaking with you. Thank you for joining us today, and we hope you'll join us again. And please keep us posted about your podcast series coming up. Did you say September or November? What was that?
It's going to come out in November, shortly before the 60th anniversary. Yeah.
Okay, great. So let us know about that. Yeah, in November, and we'll spread the word for you about that and connect people to that. And thank you for joining us today. It's been a pleasure.
Great, Mike. Thanks so much. Really good to be with you.
You too. All right. Take care. All right, folks. That's Dick Russell, author of multiple books on these subjects, including The Real RFK Jr., his most recent book, if you want to check that out. Of course, I'm Mike Adams of Brighteon.com. And I want to encourage you to share this interview. You can find it also on Rumble and on BitChute and other platforms as well, because Brighteon.com links are still banned by Twitter. I wonder why that is. Links to the military-industrial complex, perhaps? We'll never know. But thank you for watching today. God bless you all. God bless America. Take care.